Accession number 3790, Reel 10.
Mr. Johnson, Reel 10.
Anyway, the daughter Heather, Heather, I think. Well, she spoke French and she spoke German, but my German wasn't good enough for me to communicate. And although I had one affair, I wasn't really ready to communicate with a woman, with a girl I was really attracted to. And we got talking, and it turns out that the brother-in-law, David, who came from Krefeld, had intended going to England and had sent all his clothing to a friend who was living in Birmingham. So I said, what's her name? So he said, Steinmann. So Steinmann? I said, I know the brother and I know the sister in London, and the brother's in my company. And I bring him along tomorrow. I said, I would not advise you to send your clothing back because we don't know yet how the war's going. You know that the Germans are in the Ardennes. They're trying to push us into the sea. I hope they won't, but one never knows. And so next day I brought Steinmann along, and then it turned out there was somebody else from Krefeld who knew them. I brought him along as well, Kaufmann, now Kendall. And we became very friendly. And then I went one day into Brussels with him, and he introduced me to a friend of his who was also a horse dealer. And afterwards it turned out this fellow's cousin was a good friend of my mother's, also from Linnich. And it was very funny. And when we were in Brussels, we were stationed outside in Glenbeck. We went into Brussels to the 21st Army Club, which is in one of the palaces in Brussels. And I did a bit of sightseeing, and I went to the theater. And now from Lemberg, it was a waiting camp. And in Lemberg, I was on guard duty on the 31st of December, New Year's Eve. 1944. And I was outside some factory, and just before midnight, I noticed that in the school behind me, there are light signals. So I called the orderly officer, and they searched the school. The light signals were directed in direction Brussels, and they couldn't find anybody. If they didn't search properly or not, I don't know. But a few days later, we heard that whilst the RAF was celebrating New Year's Eve at the airfield outside Brussels, Melsbrook, the Germans strafed the airfield and knocked out 99 of our planes. So there was something to the signals I'd seen. And I was absolutely mad when I heard about that, that they didn't find anybody. And anyway, when I came off guard duty, we mixed drinks in the pub, and I was the first time drunk in my life. And whilst the others became jolly, I became morose, and I went back to my palace and lay down to sleep, and they came up to get me out. So I slammed the magazine onto my Sten gun, making that I was going to shoot them. I mean, with 20 rounds in the gun, it would have been a bit dangerous. They snatched it away from me, and so I got hold of the Sten gun from my neighbor without the magazine and just swung it around to let them get off, and so I could go to sleep, which I did. And in the beginning of January, we were posted to a place called Schilde, S-C-H-I-L-D-E, which is between the Albert Canal and Antwerp, where we began on forestry work, and there we were in frozen conditions. And in the village was a barber, and whilst some of us were in the laundry, where we had showers, where we had our ablution room, three of the boys went in the barber to have a haircut. And whilst we were in the shower room, my mate and I, we heard a swoosh of a V1 coming over and a terrific explosion. And that V1 went into the house where our three boys were at the barbers. At this time, when the V1 was coming down the high street and then went into the houses, a tanker lorry coming from Antwerp, from the port, was going along that road, and he braked very hard, and he was able to avoid the collision with the V1, and otherwise the whole village would have gone up. Well, as a result of our boys being killed in that building, they were digging all night to get the bodies out. The next few days, we were all very nervy on the working site. And the awkward thing was that the tree trunks were frozen. And we were not wearing army boots, but we were wearing Wellingtons. And there was a case where three trees got entangled, and when the Canadian lumberjack felled a fourth tree into them, in order to disentangle the other three, one of the trunks hit our sergeant across the chest. Sergeant Lang had to be taken to hospital with a multiple chest fracture. And that, of course, added to the nervousness. And then there was a fella who was standing on the tree chopping off branches, and then sitting chopping off a branch, the axe glanced off and went into his foot. And so I was called naturally, and I said, don't worry. I took my jackknife off, cut the boot off, cut his socks off. I said, sit down. And I did what I had learned about my little wound on the hand. I got somebody to press the edges together, put M&B powder on the German M&B powder, put a dressing around it, plaster around it, and I said, look, I would advise you, let it be and let it heal up on its own, and don't go to the medical officer. Well, the bloody fool went to the medical office and was messed up. But this method would have cured it. It was only a flesh wound in the foot. I mean, it was just here.
Right on the top of his foot.
Exactly, correct. Anyway, then we stayed there for a while. And then the officer came around to interview us again for... Control Commission, actually, for military government. But what I forgot was that when we were in Gloucester, we had an interviewer who asked for volunteers for special work. Oh, yes, when we were in White Hill, we had an officer coming who was looking for people for the commanders and SOE. And three people volunteered at that time. One was Warndorfer, whose mother was a sister of Admiral Cunningham. And then there was a chap, Heyman. He went to the Navy. And two other fellows. Anyway, altogether, 22 of our company went to the Royal Navy. And three went to SOE. We didn't know that it was SOE at the time. They were asked if they were... would volunteer for something which would be dangerous work, but when they couldn't tell what. Anyway, three went to SOE, and one of them is today a bookseller in Thurlow Road, South Kensington. He got a decoration. The second one, I don't know what happened to him. The third one, Warndorfer, the nephew of Admiral Cunningham, he was stationed at Bari, where some of our naval boys were stationed. He was dropped over the over Czechoslovakia or the Balkans, but he never returned. When he volunteered, he was 52 or 53 years old. He had been trained in the Austrian Navy, and he became a midshipman when the war finished in 1918. This is just in retrospect, which I left out before. or Verona. At Skilde, yes. I'm from Skilde, yes, in Skilde they asked for more volunteers, and several people applied for psychological warfare. And our major was afraid to lose his company, that too many people would leave, and he would be without a job, and he might be sent to a unit where he would have to do proper work. Anyway, at that stage they took only two or three for psychological warfare, but when we got to from Lemberg, Skilde. Anyway, from Skilde we went to a place called Foss, Foss-sur-Meuse, which is nearer Namur than Charleroi, which is on the northern part of the Ardennes, and there we again had forestry work. And I was on the X, and some people went to sawmill. And in February 45, we were a team of four, three were felons, and I had to trim the trees. And it was arranged that three were to be felled, and then I was to trim the branches off. But one of my mates couldn't count, and he thought that only fell two, and suddenly he heard the swish of a forest tree coming down, and I threw myself in a rectangular way to the tree, because I didn't know it was coming down, and the part just under the crown hit my lumbar region. And boy saw me jump and ran towards me, so I said, use my axe and chop off, and see if I can get up on my own, because I must see if my spinal cord was hit. And one of the X-men on the tree-felling party was the other first aid man in the other section. Anyway, they helped me up, and luckily my spinal cord was not hurt. It was not severed, and I was only very sore on the back, so they rushed me by lorry down to the Canadian medical room, and they strapped me up with very broad straps of plaster half up my back and put me light duty. I had to stay in bed for a week. And after a week I got a bit cheesed off lying in bed. I spent my birthday in bed, and so I started pottering around, helped in the kitchen, and I was still on very light duty. And after the second week, I decided to go back to the bush and just help about the place. And I helped with making lunches. And after a few days, I started working again, although I was still off duty, because I believed in exercise. And I never had any more trouble whilst I was in the army. The trouble started when I was out. So when I was demobbed, I couldn't say that anything happened to me. But the first year I was out, I had very bad back trouble in the lumbar region, and I'm still suffering of it. And I occasionally go to see an osteopath, which relieves it a bit, but it's sometimes very unpleasant. But anyway, when we were in Foss-sur-Meuse, our best cook, whose profession had been the cut of uppers in Poland, he was asked to become officer's mess cook. And he said, you'll see, I'll spoil their food. I'll be back in no time. Well, after a fortnight, they got rid of him because he spoiled their food, and he was back with us. And when I was in Foss, I one day went to Namur, to the American canteen. The American was stationed in Namur, in a palace, or in the Kursaal, I think it was. And I was sitting down and listened to the radio. And I hear the station, hear the victory sign on the radio, and here's the Soldatensender Calais, which was operating from Bush House, as far as I know, in the Old Witch, and which was one of our psychological warfare stations. And on comes Frau Wernicke, who spoke with a very strong Berlin accent, news to the German soldiers. Frau Wernicke was Annemarie Hase, a good friend of my mother's, who after the war worked for the Berliner Ensemble in East Berlin under Brecht, and afterwards at the Volksbühne. Her brother is Professor Hirsch, professor of mathematics at Birkbeck College. Anyway, I went to see her last time 4 years ago at a play in Berlin, and since then, unfortunately, she has died. Anyway, the American soldiers had shut that bloody German radio station off, so that bloody German radio station is in London. And he said, no, I don't want it, so I couldn't listen to the broadcast, which was a pity. Anyway, from Foss, I was sent on the interpreter's course to Brussels, to Ucke, near the observatory, into private billets, which was very pleasant, and I got there, I think, in April 1945, where I met some old friends. I met Alfred Loeb, Lieutenant Alfred Loeb, whom I knew from a club before the war. He was an electrical engineer, and his firm was making electrical gadgets for the Navy and for the Air Force. And he was in charge of the motorcycle section. He wanted me to become a dispatch rider. I said, look, I've fallen off a bike once and got a concussion. I'm not going to be a dispatch rider. And then I met a chap there who was a chemist, was a pharmacist in the city at Underwoods and Wolbrook, who knew me. And I met some friends from other units, and we went in for a very thorough interpreter course because we were not used to colloquial German anymore. But as I had been practicing writing in German script in the German longhand to my mother, I was one up on the others. I was able to read this, and I was able to write it. And although I left the course only with one stripe as a lance corporal, because they didn't have enough 2 and 3 stripes to give away, I was made up sergeant the day after I left. But unfortunately, it took 5 months till it came through part 2 orders. A friend of mine who was stationed near headquarters of number 30 Corps addressed me after a week when I was with military government as Sergeant Johnson, and our Canadian staff sergeant blew his top when he heard that I was a sergeant, although he hadn't seen it in orders. Anyway, I was posted I had volunteered to work for military government, which was later on called Control Commission, and was dispatched via Hanover to a place called Hildesheim. Hildesheim was a medieval town with a 1,000-year-old rose bush attached to the cathedral, with the story going around that as long as the rose bush survives, the town will survive again, will re-erect itself. Hildesheim was very badly bombed by us, but unfortunately we did not hit the important industries. We did hit a factory, the Senckingwerk, which produced the V1 and V2, but we did not hit the Bosch factory, which made marine motors in the woods. We unfortunately hit most of the old beautiful buildings. Anyway, I got there, I think, on the 11th or 12th of May, when the control of the town was still partly American. We had the American CIC there, and we had the British FSS and ASO there. And gradually the Americans were drawing out, but we were still on American rations whilst we were there. And I joined there the 104 military, local Stadtkreis military government under Colonel Hindley Smith, who is now, I believe, working for the Dental Association in London. And later on...
You've got us into May. Could you tell me about what would have been VE Day if you were here?
VE Day was the 8th of May.
Yes, yes.
And on the 8th of May we had our interpreter's examinations. The next day we had the day free, the 9th. That means we left on the 10th. So must have gotten the 11th or 12th to Hildesheim.
How did you celebrate the victory?
I don't know. We just went into town. That's all, into Brussels. We were in Brussels anyway. I don't know. Celebrate. We didn't... we were not big boozers. We were not English. just had a day off, that was all. Well, I said Hildesheim, our colonel had moved in with the Americans apparently, and a fella who was had should go into who had absconded from a escort going into a prisoner of war camp ran into him somehow, and he told our colonel that he only came back to Hildesheim to say goodbye to his parents before he went into prisoner of war camp. So the colonel drove him to his parents, collected him, and turned him over to his escort. And this was something which was not forgotten by the local population. And our colonel couldn't do any wrong, whatever he requisitioned. He pinched a lot of carpets, which we had requisitioned for our offices. He pinched a Mercedes car, which he sent with one of his officers to France in Paris. And I managed to get him receipts that he had purchased the carpets, and it was willingly given because he had done a good turn to a German soldier. Anyway, when I got into my office, on the first day I went to the Regierungsbezirk, to the larger urban and local government, and yes, I made a mistake. It wasn't 104, it was 64 military government, I think. 104 was a Landkreis. Anyway, I went to the local government and I said, I insist on having within 48 hours a list of all Jews and half-Jews in the district, which I want to send away. And Germans always standing to attention when a uniform comes about. I had this list 2 days later. And one list went to London, to the Association of Jewish Refugees for publishing, and one list went to the Aufbau, which was run by the American Federation of Jews from Europe. And I said in the list that if anybody wants any information about people or properties, they should write to me at military government, because there was no communication between Germans and abroad at the time. Through my work at military government, I became friendly with Regierungsrätin for Dr. Maria Krebs, who was the second wife of a Jewish Sanitätsrat, of a Jewish doctor, and her sons, or rather stepsons, are Professor Dr. Hans Krebs, OBE, who is now a sir. He is a Nobel Prize winner, and he is a well-known biochemist in Oxford, and he runs his laboratory after having retired from the university. And his brother, who is an engineer who lives in Purley. She has got a daughter who works for the German Air Ministry, the Civil Air Ministry. I got very friendly with her. I got friendly with Dr. Fritz Multhaupt, an ear, nose, and throat specialist, who was badly treated by the Nazis. I got lots of information from him, which I passed on to field security, and unfortunately, he landed in prison because he was denounced by the Nazi whom he had to accommodate in his house. And if my colonel would have found out that I was giving political information to field security outside my office, I would have been court-martialed. I've done a fair amount of social work in Hildesheim, looking after people who came from concentration camps. I sorted that the local authority brought the Jewish cemetery into order, that they repaired the Jewish school and turned it over to the DPs, to the Jewish DPs. I I acted as a intermediary between the military government and the political parties, the trade unions, the local government, and the Chamber of Commerce. I had to interpret for the political officer, explaining our new system of electing MPs in Germany, which is a much more sensible one than we have got in Britain, which is a mixture of the proportional representation and the majority as we have got in England, which was insisted on by the trade unions, the British trade unions. The British trade unions insisted on the Germans having a free trade union, not one which was bound to the Labour Party or any other party, which was a very sensible idea.
How long did you stay in Hildesheim?
I stayed 17 months in Hildesheim. I was very friendly with the second Lord Mayor, who was a socialist, a former plumber. And when I gave my farewell party at his assistant, who was a former military government interpreter, I invited him, of course, and I stayed in contact with him until he died. And I went to visit Hildesheim again in 1960, by which time no Jew was left there. I got stacks and stacks of correspondence from people whom I put in contact with people in Germany and who were able to make their claims thanks to the information I gave them. And I did my full share, I think, on the military side as well as on the human side, which anyone could do. I only had to act once as an interpreter in a little law case, which was a minor theft case. I think that's all.
Why were there no Jews in Hildesheim in 1960?
Well, because they'd all emigrated. You see, I was friendly with a man who'd been in Theresienstadt, who'd lost his right arm in the First World War, for which he got the Iron Cross First Class. And I was in correspondence with his wife in Atlanta, Georgia, and his younger son was at college still in America, and the older son, who was with the Americans, came to see him. And he left Germany a year after, and all the others went to various countries where I'd established their relations. They found their relations. And I've been twice to Hildesheim, actually, to visit people. And actually, I met